Jack Kornfield joined the Peace Corps after graduating from Dartmouth in 1967. He was assigned to the Public Health Service in northeast Thailand, home to several of the world's oldest Buddhist forest monasteries. And after returning to the U.S., Jack co-founded the Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts, with fellow meditation teachers Sharon Salzberg and Joseph Goldstein. He's also a founding teacher of the Spirit Rock Center in Woodacre, California, where he currently lives and teaches. His books have been translated into 20 languages and sold more than 1 million copies. They include A Path with Heart, After the Ecstasy, The Laundry, Teachings of the Buddha, Buddha's Little Instruction Book, and his most recent, A Wise Heart, A Guide to the Universal Teachings of Buddhist Psychology. Welcome, Jack Kornfield.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Now, let me ask a couple of background questions. Before you went to Thailand with the Peace Corps, after college graduation in 1967, did you have any experience with meditation?
I did a little bit. I went, when I was at Dartmouth, I studied Asian studies and studied Buddhism. I was first doing pre-med, and then I had this amazing professor of Dr. Wing Sit Chan of Chinese philosophy and Buddhist teachings, and I realized that that's what interested me. And part of it interested me because I'd had such a difficult family life, a brilliant but violent and abusive father. And when I started to hear teachings of meditation and the inner life, I realized, oh, there's a way to deal with suffering and not just carry it and kind of have it unreleased in your life. And so I became very interested in the Buddhist teachings for myself as well as the philosophy.
Well, we will return again to that intersection of, psychology, therapy, and mindfulness. But I want to continue a little bit with your own path. At what point did you realize you were going to teach and that meditation would become so central to your life?
I didn't know that. I really went to practice and learn for myself, for my own, to find a way to make sense of my life and to find a way to quiet my mind, which was kind of crazy inside, and perhaps in another way to find a way to love, because that's what meditation offers, is a way to quiet the mind and open the heart. And I knew I needed that. When I came back from having been a Buddhist monk in monasteries in Thailand and Burma, I came back to graduate school, and after a few years back in the U.S., met some other friends returned from India, Joseph Goldstein, Sharon Salzberg, and we were asked to help teach at the first Buddhist university, Naropa Institute in Boulder, and that started a teaching career that's now lasted 35 years. Yeah, one of the things that surprised me, we began to teach and rent various camps for retreats. What surprised me over the years is how the practices of mindfulness have spread across the country, and now you have mindfulness being used in hospitals and mindfulness and emotional intelligence being used in trainings in 1,000 school systems. And the centers that we've started in San Francisco and in Massachusetts have now spread across the country. So Insight LA is one of the best of these centers. Trudy's a fantastic teacher, and they have teen classes and parenting classes. They work with neuroscientists. They work with artists and business people, both in the initial trainings of meditation for anybody who wants to learn how to pay attention to their own body and heart and mind in a compassionate and wise way to live with more balance. And then they have all the programs of how to integrate it in the different parts of life and society. So I'm really pleased to do the benefit for Insight LA and for Trudy and the community in LA, which is growing quite wonderfully.
Yeah, let me just say, Trudy has been one of my teachers, full disclosure here, and I practice metta meditation most consistently. And boy, I remember, you know this probably, but I met Trudy when she offered her first few classes in a friend's living room and had a dream that she would start a center. And when I get their weekly digest now and see, as you pointed out, the family things, professional things, academic things, this whole range of things they're doing, it's really quite impressive.
And it's really helpful to have a place to go to work with your inner life. Yes, we need our own daily practice, and it has to be our own journey. But my friend Annie Lamott wrote at one point, she said, "My mind is like a bad neighborhood. I try not to go there alone."
Very good.
Something about learning to sit with a fine teacher and with other people so that you know how to deal with the pains in your body or the unfinished business, the the tears that come, the grief, the longing, the frustrations, that there are actually very skillful ways to work with those so that it helps you find a centeredness and grounding in your life. And of course, it's not just what we need, but in some way, it's really what the world needs, because at this point, it's so obvious that the technological developments, the computers, the internet, the bioscience that we have, that all together is not going to stop continuing warfare and racism and environmental destruction. We're also going to have to live with a different and wiser and more compassionate consciousness that connects this amazing planet together. And so somehow the inner life that we learn when we quiet ourselves and become in touch with ourselves also prepares us to actually be more effective in our family and community and in the web of the world.
In other words, not as navel gazing or withdrawal from our connections and responsibilities as a human being.
Exactly. As Zen Master Thich Nhat Hanh said, when the crowded Vietnamese refugee boats met with storms or pirates, if everyone panicked, all would be lost. But if even one person on the boat remained calm and centered, it was enough. It showed the way for everyone else to survive.
Yeah, and Thich Nhat Hanh was both, I think, part of the peace delegation of the country of Vietnam with the U.S. and one of the great folks in terms of bringing mindfulness to the United States.
Exactly, and somehow he exemplifies that when we take the time not just to tend to, but to stabilize and quiet and center our inner life and open metta, as you said, which is loving kindness or compassion, it doesn't just affect us, but it begins to have a profound effect on family and community and the ways that we live in the world.
Jack Kornfield, let me, in a 2004 article you wrote entitled Dharma and Politics, I'm going to read a quote, "Our relations and society as a whole are an expression of the enlightened heart. Thus, we can understand Gandhi's challenge," and this was Gandhi's words, "Those who say spirituality has nothing to do with politics, they do not know what spirituality really means."
And what Gandhi is saying is speaking the truth of interdependence, that we can't actually just do something for ourselves because we're embedded in the atmosphere that breathes together with the rainforest trees, and we're part of the communion with the seas and with El Nino and La Nina that come and go in the Pacific Ocean for us on this coast. And somehow we have to tend to our own lives as part of this web. And spirituality doesn't mean isolating yourself or becoming indifferent to the world, but rather dropping to a deep place of wisdom and centeredness and knowing in ourselves that can then respond to the world from our heart, from the wisest place in us.
And I think you said before that technology is not going to save us. Witness the Gulf oil spill, in which the technology involved in drilling a mile down in the ocean and bring oil up is phenomenally impressive and phenomenally dangerous. So what you're saying is that mindfulness, a practice which centers and quiets, actually gives us a chance to sense, connect with, realize things which we might not notice if we're caught up in technological busyness.
Yeah, we live in such a speedy and multitasking and complex world in our society, and yet some part of our organism, our nervous system, modern neuroscience is doing all these great experiments around mindfulness and its benefit. Our organism needs time of stability to find ways and practices that help us center and focus. And the quality of mindfulness, all these neuroscientists have found in fMRI studies and so forth, it actually changes the nervous system. So the training that you might do at Inside LA and the various classes that Trudy and the other teachers offer are actually a training not just of heart and mind, but a retraining of the nervous system to center, to regulate ourselves, and in some ways this power of mindfulness allows us to be aware of what's happening without being caught in the old reactions and fears that we have. There are ways to deal with judgment and fear and anxiety and the things that we tend to get automatically caught up in There's a line from Julia Child's where she says, when you're in the kitchen, remember if you drop the lamb, you can just pick it up. Who's going to know? And in some way in meditation, you start to become aware of your breath and your body. And at first, it's difficult. And there's all the self-judgments and frustrations which we have in all parts of our life. And then through mindfulness, you learn how to pick it up again, come back to the body, come back to awareness of the anxiety or the fear or the hope or whatever is coming through you, and how to be in its presence in a compassionate and wise way. And it trains you, your own practice trains you to live from a place of the best of your nature.
I've done yoga since about 1970. But I didn't start meditating on any more than a very regular basis until I read, and I think you'll appreciate this, Herbert Benson, M.D.'s book, The Relaxation Response. And so for me, it was when the Eastern tradition got the confirmation of you know, Western medicine that finally I went, okay, I'll take it on. You also have, a Ph.D. in clinical psychology. I'm going to ask you just first, personally, when did you get that Ph.D. in terms of your evolution as a meditation teacher? How did you choose to do that, and how has it affected your work?
When I came back from my time, the first 5 years living in Asia and being in the monastery, I came back and almost immediately I got a couple of jobs. I drove a taxi in Boston for a few years, which left me with some rather bad driving habits, but that's
wow. I tell people that Boston is a free for all. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, the red lights are just a suggestion.
That's
anyway,
right.
I looked at what would be helpful to me and realized that I wanted to better understand in Western terms what I had learned and what had happened to me in these extraordinary trainings in the forest monasteries of Asia, the trainings of dealing with death, trainings of compassion and loving kindness, the training of mindfulness in the face of whatever arises. So I went back to graduate school in the 1970s and studied clinical psychology. And in it, when I ended up doing my thesis, it was one of the first PhD theses that looked at the relationship of Eastern and Western psychology and what were the techniques and practices of the East. And how did they map onto things that we had been learning for 100 years in Western clinical work? And now, of course, there's this huge field that has grown with the Dalai Lama's Mind-Life series, with famous scientists like Richard Davidson, and 1,000 papers on mindfulness and another 1,000 papers on the studies of the nervous system from various neuroscientists, and then great folks in L.A. like Dan Siegel at UCLA, who's been doing the research on interpersonal neurobiology that fits so well in support of these inner trainings. Buddhism is not about people finding a new religion, you know, spare your friends and family. Buddhism is really a science of mind at its essence or its core. I say that, the Dalai Lama says the same thing. And in some way, it's learning how to deal with your own mind and with the capacities of mind and heart that are within each of us to live with dignity, to live with a inner freedom despite the ever-changing circumstances of life. And those trainings are now, as you found from Herbert Benson's work, are now very widely studied and incorporated in the best of Western neuroscience.
For listeners, Jack Kornfield, can you talk just a little bit, like with a couple of specific examples, perhaps, or specific findings about some of this convergence of medicine, psychology, and neuroscience? There's the work of Jon Kabat-Zinn, the work of Dan Siegel, etc. But a couple of examples of things that confirm each other in a way.
Sure. So in all the studies of Jon Kabat-Zinn's work, mindfulness-based stress reduction, which is in 500 or 1,000 hospitals and clinics, their studies show a dramatic reduction in the level of discomfort and pain for people who've had chronic pain from all kinds of conditions. They show that with mindfulness, the healing of certain kind of diseases, whether it's psoriasis of the skin or other kinds of organic problems, with attention and with mindfulness, the body learns to regulate itself, and the healing curve is much speeded up and much increased. There are studies that show that clinical depression, when treated not just with medication but with meditation, with mindfulness practice, there is a much, much better result which prevents relapse and prevents the re-arising of depression. The same for working with people who have obsessive and compulsive problems. There's an enormous range of both physical and psychological difficulties that have been shown to respond quite powerfully to the trainings of mindfulness and the trainings of compassion and loving kindness.
Has there been a equal sort of or an equivalent sort of shift in the larger field of, say, psychology and neuroscience and medicine and so on, and the larger culture to begin to say, oh, this is not just, the quirky finding of a few interested practitioners, but this is the real deal?
So, yes, there is, and it is in several ways. First, in the last 20 years or so, there's been a great growth in the field that's called positive psychology from both Claremont, from Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, and from the University of Pennsylvania, Martin Seligman, both who are the presidents of the American Psychological Association, showing that the human capacities for regulation, for joy, for well-being, for mindfulness and compassion are innate in us, and there are whole ways not only to train them but to expect them for human beings. And these are now being incorporated in education and in emotional intelligence training throughout school systems across the country. And I was just at a conference in December in Los Angeles with 9,000 therapists in Anaheim called The Evolution of Psychotherapy. And some of the leaders in the clinical psychological world across North America, and one of the most important and frequent themes in the presentation was the theme of training of mindfulness. It was over and over a thread. So it's really becoming incorporated, the wisdom of mindfulness and the practices that people can find and undertake in places like the Inside LA trainings or at Spirit Rock are now finding their way into education, medicine, and law in a very respected and responsible way, and it's a beautiful thing to see.
Very good. I'm going to read a quote. You don't have to respond to this one, but it's just a quote that I found in your writings, which I think is appropriate at this moment. You wrote, quote, "Meditation and spiritual practice can easily be used to suppress and avoid feeling or to escape from difficult areas of our lives. We fear the personal and its sorrow because we have not learned how it can serve as our practice and open our hearts. We need to look at our whole life and ask ourselves these questions. Where am I awake? What am I avoiding? Do I use my practice to hide? In what areas am I conscious? And where am I fearful, caught, or unfree?" I will throw you one, it's basically one last question probably. So much of what seems to allow our society to be less than it can be, in the way we relate to each other, in the way greed seems so powerful, in the way we achieve less than we can as a society, seems to me to spring from fear. How might mindfulness help with that?
Well, your quote also helps with that question, because things have evolved, and when people began to take up Eastern practices 30 and 40 years ago, there was a sense of trying to use them to escape, to go to some ideal place filled with light, and a misunderstanding that mindfulness allows us to be more present for the life that we've been given. It's not some other place. The question is not the future of humanity, as someone wrote, but the presence of eternity. And when we begin to sit and work with our mindfulness of breath and body and our inner feelings and mind with compassion and presence, then when fear arises, we can acknowledge, oh, this is just fear. It's not even my fear. It's the fear that human beings carry. This is just sadness. This is longing. This is grief. And we learn how to allow the experiences of our humanity and keep our seat, if you will, or keep our center from the place of our wise Buddha nature, or what is called our true nature in Zen, to see what happens from a place of compassion and then be able to respond in a caring way rather than be reactive and frightened and lost in it.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jack Kornfield. Let me ask you, I'm going to ask you one real quick one. Here I have 20 seconds for you. We've talked about the event at Inside LA. You are also going to be part of a conversation at the Hammer Museum in their series on Carl Jung's work in the Red Book. A moment, what is that about?
Carl Jung's Red Book details his own inner journey, how he met the figures in himself when he had a really hard time as in his 30s. And his life was falling apart. He met the figures that represented fear and confusion and darkness and evil and so forth, and how he learned to deal with those. And so there's a beautiful parallel with the practices of meditation.
Very good. And that is Friday the 28th at the Hammer Museum. You can look that up online. So again, Jack Kornfee will be offering Freedom, Joy, Love, and Forgiveness, The Open-Hearted Way, May 29th from 10 to 1 at the First United Methodist Church in Santa Monica to benefit Inside LA. The website to learn more is insidela.org. He'll be at the Hammer May 28th, you can learn more by going to the Hammer Museum's website. To learn more of Jack's work, go to jackkornfield.org. You can listen to this week's conversation and many others anytime during the week by linking to our podcast. You can also sign up to have it delivered to you weekly. You can sign up either at my website, terrencemcnally.net, Terrence McNally, terrencemcnally.net, or at itunes.com. You can also sign up to have an announcement sent to you every week telling you who's going to be on and what we're going to talk about and some background on the issues. And you can do that at the website or by emailing me at T-E-McNally, T-E-M-C-N-A-L-L-Y at mac.com. Thank you, Jack Kornfield. Keep up the good work.